I have great news. This is something that's free for Jim Harold Paranormal Plus Club members. And that is the ghost hunting class online that we're going to be having with Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewife. And that'll be the evening of May 7th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 10 p.m. Eastern Time on May 7th. To sign up, go over to jimharold.net, log in as a member, and then click on Paranormal Courses, and you'll find the area where you can sign up to Teresa's program. You also have the opportunity to ask her questions via audio while watching her presentation. I think it's going to be great fun. And if for some reason you can't make it, it's always better live because you can ask questions. But if you can't make it, not to worry, because it will be archived at jimharold.net. That's yet another benefit we're bringing Plus Club members, these paranormal courses. We're really excited about it. This one's going to be on ghost hunting. So don't be afraid. Knowledge is power. Boo. We'll see you at the course, and here's the show. I don't buy every conspiracy theory out there. In fact, you might say I'm a curious skeptic, but there is just enough evidence to consider the possibility that the powers that be are manipulating us like so many pawns on a chessboard. That's why we hear the theories out on Jim Harold's Conspiracy Corner. I'm Jim Harold, and welcome to the Conspiracy Corner. So glad to have you with us this evening. We thank you for your time. And we think it's going to be a good use of your time because we're going to talk about the struggle for your mind, conscious evolution, and the battle to control how we think. And we're going to find out who is trying to control what we think and who's going to tell us about that is the author of the book of the same title. His name is Kingsley Dennis. He is a PhD, a sociologist, researcher, and writer. He co-authored After the Car, which examines post-peak oil societies and mobilities. He's also the author of New Consciousness for a New World and the book that we're going to talk about tonight, The Struggle for Your Mind, Conscious Evolution and the Battle to Control How We Think. He's also the co-editor of the New Science and Spirituality Reader. Kingsley Dennis, welcome to the Conspiracy Corner. We thank you for taking time.
Hello, Jim. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in your book, you tell a little vignette to kind of set things up about Satan and a little meeting that he has and talking about the way to win over man's mind. Can you talk about that? Because I love that vignette. I thought it was very interesting and seemed to be quite insightful.
Yeah, sure, Jim. It's also quite provocative straight at the beginning of the book. The real impact is that the forces that we are dealing with on a daily basis may not always be such out of the way, strange or weird forces. They may purely be forces of distraction that we come into, on a daily basis and that we have to deal with. And so, although it's called Satan's Meeting, it's about how can Satan create a whole range of distractions that just keeps people away from inner work on themselves or conscious evolution, as the theme is. And so it's about, we live in, for example, we call it AD, Anno Domini. I also call it attention distractor, because I feel that the world we're living in today, in the overflow of so many impacts, are distracting people from themselves and from other sources of information. So that's the main reason for that, Jim, is to put onto the front page we are being distracted by so many things.
So how did this plan come into place? I could tell you I'm in my early 40s and there's so many things that are around today that weren't, and I'm a bit of a gadget hound, I'll admit it. And you're constantly, and the one thing that I think all of us have experienced, and now I'm guilty of it sometimes, is the looking down at the phone. You know, you can't leave the gadget go for a minute. You're engrossed in whatever seems important, but people yet live thousands of years without these gadgets. I mean, it seems to have increased over the last several years, or is that just my perception?
No, you're quite right, Jim. It's a case of function creep, or as some people refer to it, totalitarian tiptoe. It's a case of we are being enmeshed in our social environment to a greater extent. And I like to refer to an old Eastern tale, which tells the tale of a little fish who is in the stream and has a burning question. So it goes on a fishy pilgrimage, and for many days goes swimming upstream to find the wise sage old fish. And when the little fish finally gets there, he is in front of the wise fish with his burning question. So the wise fish says, "Tell me, your little one, what is it?" And the little fish says, "What is this thing called water?" And that for me encapsulates the idea is that we are swimming in a whole array of social influences, our technologies, and to an extent that we almost, we're so accustomed to it and we're so embedded in this environment that we don't even see it and we're swimming in it. And so, Jim, because of my background as a sociologist and also the other hat that I wear is I'm deeply interested in researching and also studying conscious evolution, I brought these two elements together in my research and book because I could see through my own sociological research how these institutions and what I refer to as the social matrix is a part of this sea we swim in, and it's very subtle. And that's why many of us may not notice it because we're swimming in it.
Not only do we have all of these technological distractions, we have a lot of informational distraction. You talk about, in the book, you talk about propaganda. What role does propaganda play in all of this, and who's behind the bullhorn, as it were?
Well, propaganda has always been a part of civilizing influence from the early days of state building, Jim. It's only a fact that now it's entwined in our information flows because that's more or less our lifeblood. Just to give an example, if we go back a few centuries, propaganda was in the time of the kings and queens. Anyone who spoke out against the king was stuck on a stocks or hung from a post in the middle of a town square. That was very effective propaganda because the word went around. That was almost in your face overt propaganda. What we have now is we have such a large population expanding. The population can be quite an issue to socially manage. And that's always been the case in any civilization is social management. It's a horrible word to use, but social management has been used to ensure, in the words of authority, a smooth running civilization. Well, how do you do that? You do that by ensuring that the people believe more or less what you want them to believe, and so they accept the system and the status quo. You couldn't go to war without nationalism, for example. And so propaganda now has to work through disseminating information, ideologies, and belief systems way back from our childhood days through education institutions and up until the media and our large institutions, such as our works, our money itself, money system is a form of propaganda that ties us into the system. So we have this drained into us this obedience to authority, which runs throughout all propaganda. But it is very covert. But it ensures that we basically believe the information we're being fed, so we don't revolt.
So when we turn on, whether we're in the U.S. or Europe or Australia or wherever we are, when we turn on the television, let's say, and we watch our national news programs and so forth, should we go in with the thought that the majority of what I'm seeing is propaganda?
I would say every time you watch the news, you should be very aware of the news coming out because most news comes from a consolidated source, and that's usually two or three, such as Associated Press, for example, and Reuters Thomson. Well, a lot of these consolidated sources get their information from government press releases. And so because the source of most of our news is so centralized this easy to control. It's what George Orwell called newspeak. So when we watch the news, the first step that helps us to be more aware is that we should say to ourselves, this could likely be propaganda. So let me watch television. I'm not saying we should not watch television. Watch it. And then when you get the news, we should filter it and say, well, that I'm being told that, but you know, let me research it a bit more. Let me check it up on the internet, etc. And you know, don't take everything at face value, especially if something feels a little odd. And we all of us have the capacity to have a kind of weirdness detector inside of us. And so if something feels a little odd, doesn't quite sit right, we should go and check it out before we accept it. And we should put up our own filtering mechanisms, because most of what we receive is centralized or authorized news, Jim.
Well, one of the things, and I have a point in this, but we do another program called Weird News Radio, which is almost comedic. And one of the things that we do with my co-host is we select the kind of doom and gloom story of the week. And it seems like that if you watch the news or read the news, that we're also always being told something else that's going to kill us. Or sometimes one week you will hear, you know, drinking coffee will save your life because it's great for you. And then the next week you will hear coffee, if you drink too much coffee, it'll cause cancer. You know what I'm saying. It's just basically an example. So there's many times these conflicting stories, but it's always kind of this overlying, well, no matter what you're going to do, you're doomed. And in the fifth chapter in your book, you talk about constructions of fear, the Armageddon meme. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit. Are we fed this diet of everything's bad for us, everything's going to kill us, the world's going to end? Give us some thought on that, because I'm interested in this chapter.
Sure, Jim. First, I'd like to say that your antidote to weird news by making fun of it is brilliant. We should bring out humor as much as we can. It's a great antidote. And so, yeah, you refer to the Armageddon meme that I called this end of the world is nigh, almost as if, remember the image of people with the sandwich boards walking up and down the pavement or the boardwalk? The end is nigh. And that's almost what it is. It's just a more higher level of that end of the world scenario, because there's a lot of fear being perpetrated through the news at the moment. And I have to say, unfortunately, that my feeling is that a lot of so-called new age information has also been infiltrated to some degree to give a sense of fear, because fear is a debilitating energy. It weakens us. And if we bring in fear into our mental, emotional bodies, then we are disempowered. And it does psychologically weaken us. We feel the need to reach out for dependency. And therefore, we give our power away to an authority which steps in and says, well, there's lots of insecurity in the world. We'll take care of you. And that's what I see going on. I've looked at how the so-called war on terror has been used to perpetrate what I call is the insecurity model, is that not only are we insecure, feeling unsafe, but we are insecurity, two words, insecurity. So therefore, the solution to the fear meme is that there's increased security. And so we buy into that because of feeling the need for dependency. And so that's been manipulated into another permanent war economy. So war and fear, the end of the world, and 2012 is a perfect example of that, where the Mayans have talked about a new world coming into being. Of course, when you come into being, you must leave something behind. But the fact the media have focused on the leaving behind equals end of the world is blatantly an exploitation of that. And so it's not the end of the world. We're having a lot of movers and shakers and a lot of disruption going on in our systems. But we are moving into new systems, hopefully. So I would say don't focus on the doom and gloom. Focus on the sense of opportunity and try to bring in a bit of lightheartedness into this crazy world that's going on, Jim.
So I guess the question becomes, who is behind this struggle? If we're in a struggle and we're we, the people, are on one side. Who is on the other side? Who is pulling the strings? Who is trying to control us through distraction, through misinformation, through fear? Who are these people or institutions?
Very good question, Jim, and I wish I had a direct answer for you. I really do. The reason I don't have a direct answer is because the system's set up so we can't find a direct answer. These authoritating systems are put in place by national governments mostly, and also by intergovernmental institutions that go beyond borders. But really, to be honest, the governments that put these into place are the figureheads of what is going on. It's almost as if you, for example, you have a problem with your electricity and you ring up and you want to shout at someone because they made a mistake and cut you off, but there's no one to blame because it's computerized and they put you through to another number. And that's the kind of model, the Russian doll model of compartments within compartments, of how this is set up. So we can't trace it back. There are people working behind governments who wish to make sure that people on a large scale are socially managed. Now, some of the traces go back to huge financial networks, in fact, that have been behind the funding of the governments. But there's no way to put one person's face on it. It's not Mr. or Mrs. X. There are networks of people who want to ensure that control is maintained over the burgeoning masses. This is not about money, because those people who print money and who own the money and own the banks, they don't need money. It's about control. If you can control 7 billion people, then you can keep on top of the pyramid. There's a wonderful quote from the American writer Thomas Pynchon, which says that if they can get you asking the wrong type of questions, they never have to supply the answers. And so I think it's a case of that. Is there's no face on this. It's just a kind of Russian doll system of systems within systems to maintain a control and management over people and fear, and also to keep us involved in certain financial networks, certain obedient networks, and also to, which I think is crucial, is to send out the message that such a thing as conscious evolution and the raising of our consciousness is a new age, and it's not a real concept. Evolution is biological. It's not about conscious evolution. And that, I think, is a great fallacy, because conscious evolution is a prime mover. But, of course, if you get 7 billion people waking up, then you don't have a social system as it is, and the pyramid crumbles, Jim. So it's all indebted. It's faceless. It's all about managing control. And I've not come across anyone who can put a face on it. There's family names put on it, which are mostly financial, but there's no end name, Jim.
One thing that always has fascinated me about this type of discussion and the idea, for example, the media, because I've always been fascinated with media, was a communications major, got my master's in communications. So this has been something that, you know, I've always been fascinated by, even pre-doing these shows. And many times, I'll take an example. On many of our shows, we talk about the UFO phenomena. And while I personally believe that the vast majority of those cases are people who are mistaken, there's probably some hoaxers thrown in and so forth, I think it's silly to totally discount each and every case, because we have some very credible cases out there that should be examined. And again, it might be 1 out of 100. But when you see these things reported in the media, you see a certain meme, a certain construct that's used. There's a sighting of some type, particularly on local television programs here in the States, a reporter will come on, he'll kind of be giggling, he'll have the arched eyebrow, there'll be the X-Files music playing in the background. So it's almost like there's a construct to deal with things that are outside of the accepted tale that we're being told. But many times people will say, well, Jim, well, doesn't that mean that, you know, that reporter who reported that is part of the conspiracy? And I feel that when we see those kind of stories, and I just use UFOs as an example, it appears to me that the reporter is not taking orders down from high. Somebody from whatever, the Illuminati or whatever, didn't pick up the phone and call them directly and say, you're going to discredit that. But it's the way that the media are taught. It's a meme, and they've been taught this is the way you deal with the story, and probably don't even know that possibly somewhere it's been decided we're going to discredit all of these stories by laughing at them. And they're just a cog in the machine that doesn't know that they're a cog in the machine. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a wonderful description, Jim, and I'd perfectly agree with you, is that what happened is that we've become our own jailers, because we've become our own watching ourselves, the peer pressure, and that we're afraid to speak out because Mr. and Mrs. Joe's next door will make fun of us, or you know, people down the local church or tea party will make fun of us. So that's the sense of social ostracization, and that's embedded in our systems. Because, yeah, you know, it's too much for so many, like I say, billions of people to be watched, and you can't pick up the phone and ring people individually. So what's happened is that the system's being created, so we do the job for them. And this has been used throughout history in terms of propaganda, in terms of spying on each other. It worked through most regimes, the Stasi regime in East Germany, the Nazi regime, is that people become spies upon their own fellow selves. They don't realize it, but that's an extreme case. But just like you said, people, a newscaster mocking the story, is just a way of passing on the peer pressure, that then people who have an inkling to go with the story feel a bit embarrassed by it, or even think, oh, it's conspiracy, I'll give it up. So I think, listening to you, Jim, I think we're on a same page here, because we, you know, we try to take this at a normalized level and a serious level, but understanding that there's many things operating out of the box. So my approach is that my work, I try to be very grounded. I try to give as many references as possible to give the message to people that these subjects we're talking about don't have to be weird. You don't have to be embarrassed or giggle about them. You know, they do have a very serious grounding. So let's talk about them. So, you know, I feel it's very important to normalize a lot of these subjects so we can put them on the table and talk about them. And as you say, the UFO phenomenon is a case in point, is that there's so much misinformation being put out there, conspiracy theory as well, so much misinformation has been deliberately put out there. So therefore, people stay away from that because they may think it's lots of quackery, or they're not sure which bits are true and which are not. And so, in a sense, conspiracy theory, it's very hard to become conspiracy fact because of it being infiltrated by a lot of misinformation. So we are on peer pressure, and you know, that's the way we tend to deal with information ourselves, Jim. So you're quite right.
So we know what we're dealing with here. At least we have an idea. We may not know who's ultimately behind it. So what are the strategies? What can people do? Because you talk about conscious evolution. So that hints at, to me, at a solution or a way to combat misinformation, fear, control. How do we, as normal everyday people, in our own lives, kind of turn this thing around?
Again, a very good question, and I think that's a part that we need to focus on. One part of it, I would say, is it's all about perception, perspective and perception. And the first steps we can make as just general people every day is, like you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, awareness of filtering information, not to take everything at face value. So I talk about a few, I call them exercises, but just a few points of awareness. One is called stepping back. So when we are faced with information or news, instead of grabbing it straight away, take a step back, take a bit of distance so we can then take on board the information and then decide if we want to follow it up and put it inside ourselves and say, does this sound weird or not? And how does it sit with me? Because we do have conscience, and conscience is different from consciousness. consciousness can be programmed and, through thought patterns and ideologies and belief systems, but conscience, which is in embedded in us, is a kind of, I feel, a more solid internal mechanism to filter out what we feel is something right or something not quite right. That's one aspect. And I go through certain levels of perception awareness that we can start to think about in the book. But on another level, Jim, I also feel that we are going through some more biological changes. And I look at how our DNA is an antennae. And again, backing myself up by looking at quantum biology, the human DNA actually is made of liquid crystalline, which receives and emits information in an electromagnetic field. And so we are all surrounded by these fields which we can react to. And so we have, on one sense, an increased electromagnetic environment through our technology. But also, we're having an increase in solar radiation and plasma radiation reaching us from the galaxy. This is not conspiracy theory, Jim. This is fact. If you look at NASA, the solar system is going through a more energized part of the galaxy. And looking back over eons of evolution, evolution is not gradual, as we have led to believe. It actually goes through long periods of static, no change, and then sudden leaps of change. And so I sense that there's certain impacts external that hit our DNA and have a kind of mutational effect. So I feel that we are going through more impacts, and this may change an awakening, a different vibration impact on the human nervous system and therefore human consciousness. And I think this can be reflected in our younger generations. I call our generation the bridge, because we are going through the bridge of change. But I feel the real change will come through the generations to come, who are being born into a world which has a different energetic signature. And that, I think, is what the social systems are very fearful of. And so they're trying to put in place a lot of clampdown on our communication systems, etc. Because I feel that there's an awareness that our younger generations are changing, both mutationally in their impacts on their nervous system, and also the impacts on their consciousness through not only great information but empathy. The more we connect with people around the world through our global communications, the more we can increase our empathy. So all these factors, Jim: empathy, DNA being impacted by external factors, and the increase in information through great media like your own, that goes away from mainstream, is impacting our consciousness and can increase and develop conscious evolution.
Well, one thing, the biggest change in my lifetime, I think, and in probably most of our lifetimes, has been the proliferation of the internet. I mean, I remember, again, I'm in my early 40s, and when I was a kid, you know, to talk to somebody in, right now you're in Spain, I'm in the States, and to do that was an extremely big deal. You know, you would have to make a long distance call, and it would be kind of choppy, perhaps, extremely expensive. And now we're talking via Skype, and you sound like you're in the same room with me. So it seems to make the world smaller, and I would think in some ways more difficult for the powers to be to control people having a free flow of information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly so. And that may be the contestation we'll be seeing very strong the next few years. I think we're going through a clash of mythologies, in that the top-down vertical structures have realized that a new mythology is arising, and that is the distributed network that people are connecting with. And so we're going to see not only the SOPA and the ACTA regulations and policies, but a lot of governmental policies trying to regulate the internet. And they may use again some fear memes, such as there's going to be cyber attacks or terrorism may use the internet for gaining information of how to make bombers, etc. And they're going to try to clamp down on information. That's quite obvious. But going back to the other point, what I feel is important is that because people can reach out across the world and are becoming quite intimate with strangers, that does increase an empathy. There's a neuronal activity called mirror neurons, Jim. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but if I have a minute or two, I'll explain that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. The neuroscientists have realized at the end of the 90s is that we have in our brain neurons that mimic the activity, the emotions in other people. They realized this originally through behavior of monkeys. So For example, if a person in front of me takes an apple and bites it, the same neurons in my head that would fire if I ate an apple are firing. It's called mimicry. So therefore, for example, if you watch a TV program and someone's crying and you can't stop yourself from crying, it's because our neurons are mimicking the same activity in what we see. And that means that we're increasing empathy. So if we see someone in a, let's say, across the world having a going through tragedy and suffering, we feel this suffering because our neurons are firing in exactly the same way, and we are mimicking the emotional response. So that means that we are having a inherent internal intimate connection with people around the world, and so we don't. That breaks down borders. That breaks down the us and them, the duality. I mean, if you know, it's very difficult to go to war if we feel unified with people. The us and them duality creates the enemy and creates this separateness, so we have less empathy, we can do harm across others. But the internet and global communications and social network, which the young people especially are making friends with people all over the world, increases the empathy, and that is breaking down the duality, and that is what authorities don't want, because then that breaks down the borders and of control, Jim. And so, so I think in the next few years, we're going to see a lot of action trying to clamp down on global communications.
It is interesting how we see all the legislation coming out now, and you know, SOPA was put down, but there's other things on the boards now that and you know, some of the things are legitimate. I don't think that there should be wholesale copyright infringement and so forth, but many times something that may be more nefarious has a kernel of truth to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a device that's used. You know, you take something that's legitimate. Artists and authors and musicians and actors don't deserve to have their works infringed, which I agree with, and I think most people would agree with. And then you say, but that means we have to put on this very restrictive control of the internet, and you know, they were not able to slip it through last time in terms of SOPA in the U.S., but they're going to keep trying.
Yeah, they'll slip it through somehow. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You want to protect something? Well, you have to protect everything, and we're here to do it for you. So they'll find a way to slip it in. Probably they may wait a little bit and rely on our short-term memory, or what they think is our short-term memory, or our forgetfulness, as politicians tend to do, and slip it in some other way or a different name. But I'm very I feel positive about many groups on the internet that are watching this and keeping an eye on it. And when we had the protest against that, such as Wikipedia and certain online sites, that was good to see. But these are early days, and we need to be aware and take the step back and look at things and filter them. Well, we need to feed our internal filter mechanisms, Jim.
So thank you for your time. It's been a fascinating discussion. I do want to let people know where they can find information about you and all the different things you're doing, because we just talked about one book. I know that you've done many others, and you have a lot going on. And also where they can find the book.
Well, thank you for that. Well, first off, if people just Google my name, Kingsley Dennis, they'll probably find me quite easily, because there's not many Kingsley Dennises around on the net, which helps. And also, my home site is www.kingsleydennis.com. That's one word. And you can find information about me and my essays. I write essays very regularly. More regularly than books, obviously. So you can find out about me there. And please do get in touch if you wish. I'm also the co-founder of an organization called World Shift International, which tries to empower people to make change both internally and externally in the world. And that's my other hat that I wear. And I'm open to communication. And Jim, I'd like to say a great thank you for being on the show. It's been wonderful to speak to you. And thank you for all those listening.
Well, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We appreciate it. And watch around the corner, because there may just be a conspiracy there. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.